Hello, and welcome to I Am Dad Podcast with your fatherhood authority, Kenneth Braswell. 30 minutes of wisdom, information, resources, and nuggets to help you on your fatherhood journey. Or maybe you're just curious and want to hear some real talk about fatherhood, family, and the minds of men. Well, guess what? We got you too. Sit back, grab your pad and pen, and maybe even bring a little something to sip on. Enjoy 30 straight minutes of fatherhood, family, and fun with the Fatherhood Authority, Kenneth Braswell.
Welcome to I Am Dad Podcast. I'm your host, Kenneth Braswell. I thank each and every last one of you for tuning in another Sunday morning or whenever it is you happen to be listening to this particular podcast. And so thank you for all the comments, all the emails and things that I get. Thank you for watching. I don't know why I'm so surprised when I see the activity that's taking place and the response that I'm getting. But I am, I just don't expect it, right? And so when I started doing this one, we're now in our third season, I thought that I would have gotten bored with this in the first season and would have been gone, but here I am in the third. But I think what keeps me coming back is talking to the voices that I talk to and have spoken to over the last 3 years. It's extremely therapeutic for me. It's grounding, it's settling, it's inspiring. It's all of those things. And all of that stuff is going to happen today with my guests. Today, I have with me my brother, and he's been with me for a while, and I can't wait to get his story moving. So we're going to get out of the way with his bio. Mr. James Worthy is a national consultant, family advocate, business developer, and trainer. Over the past 3 decades, he has provided and managed direct service for nearly 10,000 of Baltimore's most disenfranchised residents and provided training for nearly 8,000 human service practitioners nationwide. At current, James is providing technical assistance and training to the National Responsible Fatherhood Clearinghouse, where him and I work together. He's had a brief stint with Center for Fathers and Families in Baltimore, and he's got this side gig that keeps him moving and keeps him busy as well, and I'm so proud that he continues to do that. And I'm also happy that we are able to work together, and I love the brothers that I work with that have a passion, but we also have talents, right? Because God feeds our ability to do our passions through our talents. And all the time, those talents don't necessarily line up with the passion, right? But somehow or another, they work it out. James, how you doing, sir?
Man, Kenny, I am so excited to be back with you, my brother. And anytime, whether it's on the podcast or we on a plane somewhere where we just get to sit down and vibe, man, it is always uplifting to my spirit. And I just appreciate what you're doing. Again, 3 years, I remember when you said, I'm going to start this podcast, and it's been 3 years. So, man, congratulations for all the success, and thanks for having me today.
No, not a problem, bro. My most intimate times with my brothers is when we're out somewhere else around the country. I was telling Patrick not too long ago, I was like, man, I've experienced a lot of experiences with a few brothers in my circle. And not just nationally, internationally, I've experienced things with my brothers. And the intimacy and camaraderie and brotherhood that we have, when we go and do our things, right? We go do the work. Yeah. And then after the work is done, we peel off and we break bread together, as yes, the old saints would say. Those times for me has been the most endearing times, of my life. As the young folks say today, lifing.
Just life.
And talking about lifing. James, I've heard your story, and I can't wait for you to tell the audience your story. It is comical, touching, and a whole bunch of other adjectives at the same time. Tell me your daddy's story.
Man, well, you know what? Kenny, I'm going to give you one just recently. And it's being a dad. I am blessed to have 3 incredible boys. 23, my middle son just turned 21 this month, and my youngest son is 17. Well, I want to talk about my son's 21st birthday. You remember when you turned 21, man, you was out with your boys, we were doing all types of things. Mm-hmm. Well, my son came to me and my wife and said, I want to do my 21st birthday here at the house. I'm like, okay, what you planning? I'm thinking he going to want to have his buddies over, do a little what they call today, a kickback. You know, they want us to move out and they kick back. He said, nah, the fellas want to come by and kick it with dad and we're going to have a casino party. And now that we all 21, we just want to spend some time with dad.
Mm.
Kenny, first of all, my face, the smile went from ear to ear. But the second part, man, I became overwhelmed. You know, I don't know what it is. As we get a day earlier, tears come easy. I don't know what that's all about. But, man, so he was like, that's what I want to do. And we sat here, and all his buddies came by. Many of them had played football for me, and they've been in the house since they were 5 and 6 year old guys. And they done grew up here. And all of them, I mean, they came and they hung here from probably 5 in the afternoon till almost 2, 3 o'clock in the morning. Many of them stayed overnight. It was just, and they just wanted to hang. And the conversations we had about girls, about school, about growing up, about, you know, Ben, one of his best buddies, Ben turned 21 before he did. And Ben spent his 21st birthday here. Mm. So, and he blew his knee playing soccer. ACL. He said, man, you know when you get old. He said, Big Pops, you know when you get old, man, stuff go. And I was laughing. But my mom, I shared this with my mother. And my mother said, boy, you are your father's child.
Mm.
And I lost it, Kenny. Many of the family might not know on here. I lost my dad 14 years ago. That was my best friend. And I remember all of my boys, when I went off to college, calling home one day, and all my boys were over the house hanging with my dad. And I felt some type of way, Kenny, I ain't gonna lie, I felt some type of way. I'm like, what y'all doing on my house? That's my dad, y'all need to get up out of there. But, and to look back and to see that being duplicated with my son's friends, that for me, has been the full circle, and I've been it's all this month, it's just been eating, it just overwhelming. I don't even know the words, but I just think about it, and these young guys, I'm going out to the car yesterday morning, and car pull up, yo, coach, what up? And they jump out the car, it's more of the fellas, you know? And it's just, that for me is probably the most gratifying piece of this dad walk. You know, that not only do you, hopefully you're doing the right thing by your kids, but when other kids come to you in that same fashion, one of his buddies is going away. You know, he didn't do the traditional college. He's going away to trade school. And it's funny because he came here and he's got parents, but he came here because no one else in his family has gone off to college or gone away. Wow. So he came here and he sat with my wife to say, what should I get? You know, I don't know what the buys would. So we helped him put his whole going away package together. And then he said, well, I'm leaving on Monday. So Big Pops, I'm gonna come back through on Sunday and watch the game with you before I bounce out. Mm-hmm. And Kenny, it's just, that for me is, I believe I'm living in the legacy of my dad.
Yeah, and I'm glad you said that, because I want to roll back into that piece, right? Because I don't know if you remember this. I don't know where we were when we were having this conversation. And I think it was after either I had spoken or Patrick had spoken, one of the two of us. And your comment to me was, man, I don't have that story to tell. Like, y'all stories about your dads. Like, and you said, I don't have that story. And I looked at you and be like, what? I was like, dude, tell your story. Don't tell my story. Don't tell his story. Tell your story. Because just as much as people need to hear the fatherlessness story, they need to hear the fatherfulness story. Right? And they need to be able to understand why fatherlessness hurts so much. It is because when you experience Father fullness, you may not know what it is, but everything in your spirit gives you indicators of what it is. And your funniest story is about when you talk about your dad. I know that it extends back deeper than that, because your dad's dad, and if I'm not mistaken, your dad's dad, dad. That's the daddy story I want to hear you tell as well.
Well, I'm going to tell you, man. And, you know, I want to say something about what you just said. You gave me permission with that comment to feel very comfortable in the space of working with dads. Because up until that point, I always felt like I don't want to make anybody feel a certain way. You know what I'm saying? So when you gave me that, man, it put me in a space where, okay, my story does have a space, does have a place in this conversation. But, you hit on something about the three generations of daddies I grew up around. And it's so funny because I was sharing with a good friend of mine who's about 10 years younger than I am. I was talking about what it means to transition from the child to the father to the grandfather. And he said, well, you're not a grandfather yet. I said, I know, but I grew up with my granddaddy. You know, I was in and my great granddaddy. I grew up with them. So as I explained this to him, I said, one of the things that this journey has is the wisdom of, for me, the wisdom of almost 124 years. Wow. And what do I mean by that? My great grandfather, he was my best friend as a little boy. I mean, can you imagine somebody being born in 1900 playing electric football with a little kid? You remember the electric football games? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you know him. This guy, and we got pictures of it. I saw a picture. That's what made me have this conversation. But I saw a picture. He's in his, you know, old school. He had his pajamas, but his robe on. You know, he had his cigar. He ready for bed. And here's a picture of little me with the pajama on right behind him. And I wanted to play electric football. And I remember this so vividly. This man sat down with me and played electric football when we were supposed to be going to bed. Mm. And I told this to my friend. I said, I sat at his feet for so many years because he lived to be 94. So I and that was in 1994 he passed. So I was good and grown by the time he passed. But he was born in 1900.
Wow.
So I'm listening to the history of St. Mary's County, Maryland, where he was. There was slavery just still going on. Indentured servitude, as they call it. It was still going on when he was a boy. And he's given me this wisdom and why he does the things he did and the values. One of the values, and you heard me say this, you know, and my sons laugh at it, but it's still in me today. He said, I asked him one day, I said, Mr. Hillary, because we call him Mr. Hillary.
Mm-hmm.
Now, his name was Hillary, but I couldn't say Hillary. I said, Mr. Hillary. Mm-hmm. I said, but Grant, why you never wear tennis shoes? And I remember him taking his cigar, taking a puff. He said, boy, let me tell you, tennis shoes are for games. You are a child. You spend most of your day playing. So you should have tennis shoes. I am a grown man. I very seldom play games. So I should have shoes on my feet. Kenny, now, I don't know about anybody else, but when somebody you kind of idolize tell you stuff like that, you don't know how that's going to sit in your spirit.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it wasn't until the pandemic.
Okay.
2020. Mm-hmm. Okay. It wasn't until the pandemic that I personally had more than one pair of tennis shoes at a time.
Mm.
Wasn't until the pandemic. Now I got 6-7 pair of tennis shoes and only 2 pair of regular dress shoes. I'm going crazy. The pandemic changed my whole world. But it was, it's those things that I'm now sharing with my children. I'm sharing with other young men who have children. And it's this whole daddy movement, this whole really understanding what the impact of my fathers have been on me. It comes up in my day-to-day life every single day. I will say something, do something, have a value system that it comes from them. Mm. And I said to my friend, dude, do you know that I am living 124 years of father experience?
Wow.
Kenny, and this... I had a young man, a business colleague, call me out of the blue just last, I think it was Tuesday. I'm in the grocery store. And this young man called me. He said, Mr. Worthy, I felt a little weird calling you. Now, he only knows me from business. We don't have an intimate relationship. He said, would you be a father figure to me? And Kenny, I was taken back. I was like, okay, where this coming? Because you know how we are, Kenny, mm-hmm. when somebody come up with something. Look, your spidey senses pop up first.
Yeah.
But I'm sitting here, I'm going, what do you mean? And he said, I just watch how you support and work with people, especially men. And I've been watching you from afar for about a year. And he said, every time I see you with the guys you work with, or I see you in an event, or I see you on, you are always in a space of supporting brothers in a firm but serious but fun way. Mm-hmm. And I lost my dad at 2. So I'm thinking he's a young guy. Kenny, when I finished talking to that man, 34 years old.
Wow.
He got a wife and 2 kids of his own. But he said to me, I lost my dad at 2, and I have been trying to catch up on manhood since. Mm-hmm. Kenny, I had nothing else I could say to him, but okay. I said, I'll be the best mentor, and all I can do for you, my brother, is give you the example of what I had. I'm not here to tell you how to live your life, what to do. I'm just going to give you the support and the love another man can give to another man. And if you see something I'm doing and it moves you to do the right thing for you, then do it. If it moves you, you say, I ain't with that, then don't do it, because I'm the example not to. Mm. And man, we just been staying in touch, text messaging, emailing. We see each other on events. We on Zoom together. But and he's having such success. He's doing well. He's taking care of his kids. His wife not even working right now. He's handing them the whole deal. He wanted to talk about that because he's feeling some type of way. He's like, I'm overwhelmed. I'm scared. I don't know if I can handle it. And he said, I never had a man to talk to about these feelings, so I just got to muscle it out.
Wow. Wow.
So that those are all the father experiences going on with me right now.
Yeah, that's enough. But then I would say it's the tip of the iceberg, but it's a nice little chunk of the tip of the iceberg. But now we find ourselves in this work, right? And so mm-hmm. this is what we do as our calling and to a certain extent our vocation. And you've walked into this work a particular way. It wasn't like, I've had people ask me, like, what did you go to school for? Like, how did you go? What did you train for to go to school? And up until a few months, I didn't have a word. But now that I hear my son and his friends using this term lifing, that was my word. That's how it happened. My mm-hmm. educational experience in this particular realm of work was my lifing. Talk about your transition into this work. How'd you get here?
Man, Kenny, the craziest thing on the planet, man, I went to Penn State University and majored in business management with a minor in hotel and restaurant management. Man, I ain't never wanted to mess with nobody's family ever. It was just not, I didn't think that was my calling. I didn't get the memo, never came to the desk. I was about, let's go out here and make some money. That was James' work. I was, and I was struggling because I had left school and couldn't find a good job that they said supposed to come after you get an education. And my wife, my girlfriend at the time, she was working in the Head Start world. And, you know, I saw how much fun she was having with the family, the kid, but I also heard all of the issues. And I was just like, yo, I couldn't do it. And I just kept saying to her, I couldn't do it. That's crazy. But I'm struggling looking for a job. So I started this little business on the side. You know how when you ain't got no job, Kenny, you start saying your hustle is your business. So I started this little business on the side. And she said, hey, the Head Start program is looking for someone to do a fiscals, policies, and procedures manual. That's right down your alley, ain't it? I said, absolutely. So I dressed all up, did my thing, went in and presented, talked to them, presented a proposal, and they gave me the contract to draw it up. So I'm like, yo, I'm on my way on my business. Now I'm going into a Head Start center every day. Again, I'm suited and tied up, got a briefcase, hard shoe, you know how business. And this little dude throws a truck back into the classroom, hits the door. Now you know Head Start is for 3 to 5 year olds. He hits the door and he is bolting down the hallway towards me because the main door is behind me and he rolling. And I hear somebody say, grab him. Now, where I grew up, you don't touch nobody else that was a kid. So I was like, if y'all leave it up to me, I'm gonna kick this door. I'm little man is out of here. I'm not touching them. But they yelled it again, grab him. And that was God's way of saying touch life. Because I grabbed this little boy, and all I knew at the time, I didn't think about it. I did what my grandfather, my great-grandfather, my dad would have done to me. Look me in my eye and say, what is going on with you? And he's kicking, so I wrapped his little legs up, and I took him back in the room. And just like my granddaddy would have done for me, I put him in a chair, said, don't move. Stay right there. And he just looked at me the same way I would have looked at my granddaddy had he done that to me. Like, okay, this lion bigger than this lion, so I'm going to sit still. Mm-hmm. And the teacher looked at me and said, that's the first time he's listened all day. Kenny, that was the day that I think I got touched to work with families, because every day that I came in that building for the contract period, that little boy hit the door, ran out and grabbed my leg. Mm. And I had to play with him and talk with him, walk him up to my office, show him what I was doing, to walk him back down to class, and he would go good. By the time I finished that contract, I had 7 or 8 of them little type of boys with me every single day. And the director said, have you ever done male involvement or fatherhood services? Now, Kenny, I don't know about you, but you know when we was out there trying to make it in the world, somebody asked you if you could do something, the first question you ask is there a check with it? Mm-hmm. And the second answer is absolutely. Right. And life, for the first few years between reading stuff that you had written, that's how I came to know a Kenny Braswell, because you were doing work in New York and your work was all over the country. There was people like Nigel Van, who was doing work in Head Start and was writing stuff. Another one of our colleagues, friends. And I just started reading. There was a guy who's been on this podcast, Dr. Ron Mincy. Mm-hmm. Well, you won't believe this. We got a grant at that small little Head Start from a program that back then, Dr. Mincy was the program manager. My first career job in this industry was funded by our friend and my mentor, Ron Mincy.
Wow. Yeah.
And from that point on, man, I've been doing this work for 30 years now. And it's life's experience, business experience, value systems for my dad, getting coaching, training, going to a special training, learning about psychology. I've had to take some psychology classes. I've had to take how to facilitate groups classes, some social work stuff. But it's been a life and self-education. And one thing I heard in business, they say formal education can make you a living, But self-education can make you a fortune. And the fact that I've been able to be self-educated in this business to go find the stuff that I need to know, it has been my life has been so blessed.
Wow.
So blessed. So blessed.
Now, you were a couple of weeks ago at David On. And David and I started talking about Baltimore. And then I was talking about D.C. And like both of you both transitioned back and forth. D.C. might be Baltimore. Baltimore might be D.C. But there's a different nuance about Baltimore.
Yes, it
and
is.
And I was telling him that I was watching Dave Chappelle's Dreamer. And he was talking about D.C. because he was in D.C. and he's from D.C.
Mm-hmm.
But he was talking about his relationship with Chris Rock. And he said that he wasn't quite sure, but he understood why Chris Rock decided to do his coming out show after the slap. Had to talk mm-hmm. about that. The first time he talked about in public was in mm-hmm. Baltimore. Mm-hmm. And Dave Chappelle said, D.C. is one thing, but Baltimore is something. He was like, it was so funny. He's like, Baltimore is something mm-hmm. else. From the perspective of your work, talk a little bit about Baltimore.
Man, this is the city I have grown to love. And that's hard to say because Baltimore will challenge you. Mm. It will definitely. But as far as this work is concerned, the picture that is painted about the disenfranchised people, and I'm going to stay there because I don't want to put a color or ethnicity on that statement. But the picture that is painted is that there is a blatant disregard for good life. Mm. You know, they kill each other. They don't care about their kids. They ain't got no, that is the picture that is painted. But doing this work, man, working in the heart of Baltimore City, it has been amazing that this big city is nothing more than a small country town with people who want everything but have very little to start. And as we started to do this work and the ravishings of poverty, the ravishing of substance abuse, the ravishing of the penal system, as I started to meet men who all they wanted, whether they were young guys or old guys, I never heard a guy say, in all the 10,000 families we've worked with, I never heard one guy say, I don't want to deal with my kids. Never. And is it hard here in Baltimore? Is it a gruff gruff persona? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Is it some stuff you got to go through, get through, live through to make it here? Absolutely. But the one thing that I know, when you get beyond the gruff, and I'm share a story. Working with a young man who had come home from prison, had a young baby, young kid, and you know, he had his Baltimore trappings on. So it was loud. It was braggadocious. He was that dude. He embodied what it takes to survive in the element that he was in. And it was one of those things where I don't never profess to be the toughest dude on the planet. That ain't who James Worthy is. Now, I grew up in some craziness in Southeast D.C., but I tell people, I'm from there, but I'm not of there. I ain't built like that. Yeah. So, but I do have this, you're just not going to punk me type of stuff. And he came into our program and he was one of those guys that I saw so much in that he was covering up because he was just had the armor on. And I remember the day I told him to his face, I don't care how big and tough you are, but I will fight you for your life. I ain't gonna fight you for no money. I ain't gonna fight you, but I will fight you for your life. And he came in the building and he was just in a bad space. And he want The only way he could let emotion out was through pure anger and physical, that's the only way he knew. So he came into the building where we were at, and he was in that space, and I said something, and it just triggered him. And he went into his rah, 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 like, bah, 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 you know how we do. And I was like, well, if that's how you want to carry it, let's go. And I'm back and forth with him, and we go in the room, and I knew all he needed was a space to let it go. So I didn't feel any fear of getting hurt by him or attacked by him or anything. He just needed to get it out. And the only way people were grabbing the door. Mr. Worthy, are you okay? I said, leave the door alone. Do not come in here. I am okay. And people stood outside the door and they heard it, and they were like, oh, he's going to kill Mr. Word. And then it just went quiet. And the reason it went quiet is because he had let so much anger out. He had nothing else to let go but tears.
Wow.
And this dude is, till this day, man, he called me big brother. I just talked to him the other day. This was 20 some years ago, and we still that tight. His oldest son is out of college now. His youngest son is going into college. I mean, it's just, but he was in this space, and he just wanted to do it right. He wanted to do life right, but he had so many obstacles that he just couldn't see around or how to move around. And that kind of set my stage in this work. Because people were like, well, Mr. Worthy, you working with some of the hardest, the truth. I said, let me tell you something. The real killer is not coming in here asking for help. Mm. Like you do your work in Atlanta. There's a lot of people in Atlanta that'll come at you with some crazy. Mm-hmm. But the real killer is not sitting in the Gentle Warriors program.
Right.
He's just not coming. Because mm-hmm. he's still a real killer.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
mm-hmm. So what this work taught me is that a man's child, a man's life, when he really wants to do something different with his life, he will let go the real killer for what it means to be a real man. Wow. And that's how I did my work in this. We did outreach, and people's like, well, where y'all go do outreach? I said, if we heard of a place where there was a murder in Baltimore, that's where we did outreach the next day.
Right.
And when I went out there, I almost looked like 5-0. I had a suit on. I used to do outreach in a suit. Why? Because I wanted people to know I can meet you where you are, but I'm not where you're at. I want you to come somewhere different. I want you to see something different. I'm going to carry it a little different because I'm going to show you that, yes, you can play the street game, but you also can play the corporate game if you know how to switch it up. And that was the work that I did, man. And that work led me to you. That led me to the lifestyle that we got today, Kenny. I can't tell people, you know, my daily prayer, I always pray for my fatherhood family. And your name and Patrick's name and Eugene's name and so many names come up right when I start that prayer, because it has been this opportunity to impact men and families. They didn't have a class at Penn State that say, take this class and you get hit.
Penn State
didn't have that class.
Yeah. And, you know, and the other thing, too, is, you know, I've been able to, you know, this is another term that I've heard more recently, and that is find your tribe. Right. Mm. You know, this work that we do has allowed me to find my tribe. And so, and the cool thing about that tribe is we stretch from New York to California, from Mississippi to, you know, St. Paul, Minnesota. And mm-hmm. all points in between, there are men and women across this country that are within the same experiences that we are in, trying to work and do things for their community that people have yet to find value in, which is the most frustrating thing in doing this, is that in this year 2024, we're still trying to convince people that fathers are worthy of support and services. What I want to ask you next was, we also talking about the hardest of the hard. I called on James, Patrick, and David. Man, this must have been I can't even remember how long ago. It must have been 10 years ago, maybe like 10 years ago. I got to go back and look at the video and see. Wow. I got this opportunity to do this contract in the correctional facilities in the state of New York. And I put together this curriculum. Yeah, it had to be 10 years ago because that curriculum was based off of my movie, Spit and Anger, and we're celebrating our 10th anniversary.
Wow.
And so I was called to go in, and I was like, man, who am I going to call to go in this spot with me? Because I ain't got no time to get in there. I just need some brothers that's going to be able to go up there and take care of this thing. And you and Patrick and David said, I'm going in.
Going.
What I remember very vividly is there was this one night that I came up, and we went somewhere to eat, which we often do, to kind of break down, recoup, reevaluate. And you guys, we were having this conversation, and I just put the camera up. I don't know if you remember. I put the camera up.
I remember it, Kenny. I still have a little copy of it. I keep it. That conversation was, woo.
This work that we do and going particularly inside to do this work and knowing that it is life circumstances and environments that have gotten many of those individuals in that incarcerated circumstance. What does this work and what has that work looked like to you?
Kenny, just thinking back to that time and that as hard, and let me say hard in the right for it, as hard as that work was, not from a physical, but from an emotional standpoint, a mental standpoint, to go in that prison and work with young men who have been labeled as the worst. You know, that was a crowning piece of my understanding of behind the fence. Because I'd worked with, you know, guys in transitional housing, guys who were minimum security about to come out, but to go into a maximum security prison with youth who just, they hadn't had time to let life develop any wisdom. And that for me really let me know that no matter what the circumstances, what you've been through, what mistakes you may have made, the impact, And I'm going to say this hopefully properly. The impact that a male father figure can have on your life can change it all. Because you remember us talking about them young men, and we did that little test, and we asked them to grade their fathers. That I know David speaks about this, because it hit me and David the same way. Every one of them guys that we were in there with gave their fathers an F-. If they could have put another letter on the grading system, they would have gave him a Z. And the fact that these guys were sitting here and trying to figure out, one, why they were so mad. Two, who can I really listen to other than my... I remember one kid in there, his mama was substance abusing, out prostituting, didn't have food on the table. He gave his mama a B. He graded his mama a B and gave his father an F because he wasn't there. And you know where his father was? In the same prison system he was in. And when I got to talk to that guy, he was like, he never taught me how not to be here. And that for me is when a Kenny Braswell, a Patrick Patterson, when somebody is able to reach one of these young men, and because we're not judging them on who they have been and what mistakes they had made, because you know how that goes, Kenny. We done been judged about mistakes we done made, and everybody come with a, well, you know, you need to. Mm-hmm. You can't correct, and I got this from you. You can't correct me if you're not connected to me. Wow. Stop that. Don't come tell me what I need if you're not going to be willing to connect to me to find out who I am. Wow. And that work that you allowed us to do up there, I was heartbroken every day I left out of that place. Yeah. I remember leaving out and had to sit in a car. So, go ahead, man.
I often say this, and I don't know what the real number is, but I always tell people, I walk around with 10,000 stories in my head.
Yes.
Of men, boys, women, girls, whatever, who have told me a story or I've experienced their stories or whatever. And those things last in your mind, you know, and every once in a while I could pick one out, you know, just to talk about it. Some of them, even though you hear it, it doesn't sit in your brain, it sits in your spirit. And I believe that when those things sit in your spirit, that that becomes the fire that won't allow you to stop until you can service every person that you possibly can serve for their father wounds, right? Mm. But you're also in the space of sports, which is a whole nother conversation, right? And so you're a coach, you're a football coach, and all of your boys play football. And there's a whole other daddying component that comes into space when it comes to coaching. Talk about that experience, and not only that experience, but also weave in there the fact that not only are you a football coach, but much of what you were talking about before with respect to these guys coming to you, where people won't understand what was the dynamic that was drawing them to you. It wasn't just the experience of seeing what kind of father you were to your boys, but it was also experiencing the kind of man you were in their developmental space.
Absolutely. And you know, it's funny because all of this goes together, Kenny, and I'm a pull this. When I started coaching football, little league football, I started with flag football years and years and years ago. But when I got to tackle football, we lived in a nice community. This is one of the things about neighborhood and community that we're losing because we're so disconnected. But you know how it used to be when you was, the neighborhood was, you could find one good guy, two good guys in the neighborhood. Well, we lived in a nice community and I had all these little kids, little boys around in the community. So all of them were going to school, catching a bus together. So when I started coaching, my recruiting happened right in my little townhome community. And I started recruiting 7, 8-year-old little boys and their families. And those kids today are 21 and 22 and 23 years old. So those are the kids that have been with me on the football field. And one of them, I'm just so glad he's took some of this. But one of them, I was coaching because it was about 10 years ago. So that means my youngest son would have been about 10. It would have been about 7. And one of the players that we had, one of his friends, as he started to grow up, he wanted to, his dad wasn't around, so he spent a lot of time with us. But then he started wanting to be out there because his mom worked nights, so he wanted to be out there. So he was pushing the envelope. And he started getting in a little trouble. And his mom called me, and I picked him up one day. I saw him at the Royal Farms. I picked him up one day. And I shared the experiences that I had in the prison system with him. Because I said, you keep going this direction, bruh, I'm not going to be able to hang with you. And you know, you can come to my house any time of day, any time of night. You can get food. You can crash out. You can play the video game. You can do, you know, you treat it like my child in my house. I said, but if you keep moving down this path, that's not going to happen anymore. And he and my son kind of disconnected because my son knows the people that I want him around. But I didn't disconnect from him. And I saw year after year, time after time, his daddy say he was going to be at a game and not show up. This boy went on to play high school football, got thrown off the football team. The day after his daddy told him he was going to be at his first JV football game where he actually played quarterback, he went out after that game and got himself into a fight and trouble and got locked up that night after the game. His mother called me, asked me, do you have any connections? And I said, yes. We got him into alternative school and not jail. And he finished alternative school. I just saw him at the gym maybe a week ago, 2 weeks ago. And he said, yo, coach, man, it's crazy out here. I'm going to trade school because I got to get out of here. Now, we live in a very, very nice area, Kenny. It ain't like he in the hood. Okay? But he's talking about getting out of here like he in the barrio, so to speak. But it was funny because this whole coaching thing, these kids have seen me discipline them on the field. I'm the same guy that they see in the neighborhood. I'm the same guy who's going to stop and say, you good? Need something to eat? What you doing? Where your mama at? Hey, boy, stop doing that. Hey, get over here. But and I'm the same guy that's going to pick them up, take them to football practice, grab pizza afterwards, because I know some of them moms are working double shifts, so I'm going to go ahead and eat them, make sure he's home. And so they seen, yo, come over to the house because your mom not home. Come on over to the house, you and Amari, y'all get your homework done. If you need to take a shower, go ahead, take a shower. Call your mom, tell her you here, and when she on her way home, I'll drop you back at the house. I mean, that's been what they've recognized. And it's my wife just said this, it's a little bit bittersweet because all my babies from football are now grown, high school, going on to college. Like my middle son is going into his junior year of college. So my first group is juniors in college. Mm-hmm. My last group is seniors in high school. So my wife said, wow, your babies are all grown. And she know I treated all of them like my real babies. These were my kids. So, you know, this coaching space, I tell every man who, especially if he's disconnected from community or disconnected from his family, the one place, especially for us, and when I say us, I mean African-American men, the one thing that coaching has done for me is let me understand that the one place I am still looked at and revered as a black man mm-hmm. is on the fields and the courts around this country.
Wow. Yeah.
I had an experience on coaching, and this young kid came back to me when he was in high school. He was he played flag football for me when they were little boys, and then he went for 1 year. His mom only let him play. His parents only let him play 1 year of tackle, but he went to tackle football. And he was a kid whose parents were well-to-do. They were of different ethnicity, a different religious background. But great kid, great family. But, you know, his mom pulled up to drop him off at practice in the beautiful Cadillac Escalade. He lives in a beautiful palatial estate and pulled up. And I saw him jump out the car and head to the field and turn back and say to his mother, grab my equipment. Now, Kenny, you was raised the way I was raised. Mm-hmm. Did you just tell your mama to grab your equipment? So I instantly lost it. I said, hey, no, boy, you done lost your mind. Apologize to your mother and take your tail up there and get that equipment and get your butt down to this field, and you know you running 10 laps. So I just went into my space. I did not see the other Escalade pull up. It was his dad. So when I whipped around, I saw his dad. So you know, Kenny, I'm like, uh-oh. Mm-hmm. You may have stepped out of line, big bro. That's how I'm thinking. So I immediately say, you need to go clean this up. Don't let this come to you. You go handle it. So I make a beeline to go talk to dad. As I get to the fence, I start to say, hey, I apologize. He said, do not apologize. Kenny, I want to keep this as rated R as or rated PG as pop. He said, kick his ass because I can't do nothing with him. That man don't look like me. He don't worship where I worship. We don't live in the same neighborhood. But he respected the man, African-American man, enough on that field where he might not have given me that same respect on the street.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Right.
He respected me enough not to just alter, not to just intervene on the sports field, but to intervene in the discipline of his seed. When I share that with other brothers, I say, nowhere else will we as black men right now get that leeway.
Why?
Because I just made an impact in this little boy's life that may change how he works with other young black men he grew up with.
But it also changes the trajectory of how he treats women.
Thank you. That's right? a whole nother conversation.
You know, I heard someone say, I can't remember who the quote is attributed to, but they were responding to the notion of women who say, I don't need a man. Oof. And the comeback is, you may not need a man, but your son needs a man.
And your daughter.
And your daughter needs a man. And that's where that leans. So as we close, James, I want to end here because the other pleasure that I get with you is to go around the country talking to people in the professional space about this work of responsible fatherhood. And I have sat in rooms and witnessed both your brilliance and your electricity in those rooms as we, no pun intended, fire people up into this space to know that we are A, serious about this work, but also committed to this work in trying to get others to understand the essentialness of fathers in the lives of their children. And so I've gone into rooms and see you speak with the same electricity if there was two people in the room or 500 in the room. It don't matter to us. Often said that if you can't speak to an empty room, you can't speak to nobody.
There you go.
Right? And so talk about the importance of that particular work for you, influencing not only the field of responsible fatherhood, but other fields of social work as well that people may think has no association to responsible fatherhood. But if you're talking about family, it all has association with responsible fatherhood. But talk about that work a little.
Real quick, Kenny, and that is huge for me because, yes, oftentimes people allow us to be in the space of responsible fatherhood, tell the fathers what to do. But I've been blessed and with your support to be in rooms that are a little different than our tradition. And why it means so much to me is because so much of the root of working with families, human services, so much of it is rooted in female and child first intervention, fathers as a, oh yeah, by the way, intervention. And it's so important for me to let people know that yes, fathers, families, mamas, children all need support in getting where they're trying to go. I don't know what the narrative is that once you turn 18 as a man, you're supposed to know what you're doing. Because we don't do that to women. We want them to understand. And oftentimes in these rooms, my goal is to build enough electricity, so to speak, so that we get people that advocate, become partners in the fact that, no, let's intentionally work with men. Because if you can intentionally work with men, the work with children and mothers and families can be eased. It can become an easier part of the process. And that's why this work means so much to me. Because as a man, you know, when I take my child to the doctors, when I take my children places, I'm not James the fatherhood guy, I'm James the dad, and they looking at me crazy like, where mom at? I remember going through that. Right. I do this work for a living. You remember I called you and told you about this.
Right.
I'm doing this work for a living and my oldest son is not doing well. We had a doctor's office. Lady looks by me and go, is his mother coming?
And then there's that.
So if I ever get an opportunity to speak in the medical world about interventions with fathers at prenatal, I got to do that.
Right.
If I ever get an opportunity to talk to the court systems and the judges, you allow me to go to one of those events. I think I was in Portland somewhere or Spokane, Washington. I can't even remember. But I talked to the courts, reconciliation courts, leaders, judges. Ugh. Man, if you could have seen those people when I got started, Kenny.
Right, right.
And by the time I finished, I got judges in there with tears in their eyes because of their own father issues.
Mm-hmm.
That's the importance of this, that everybody know that father in everybody's life has a point. Whether it's fatherlessness or fatherfulness, you got a connection to that word, that thing called dad. And you got to know that that means a lot. So that's why I love this work. And that's why I can't stop. People say, when are you going to retire? I said, I've built a lifestyle that I don't need a vacation from.
Right. You retire from your vocation. You don't retire from your calling.
I don't kind of retire from a calling. This is a lifestyle. Right. I do it on the sidewalk or I do it in a room.
This is what I always tell people. And the reason that you don't retire, from your calling is you don't want the telephone call that tells you, I don't need you in your calling no more. Because when you get that call, that's finality.
That's it. Day is over. Day is over. You're no longer needed. That day is over.
Right. Yeah, you want to leave your vocation. You could do that because that call is different. You can another vocation. But if you get the call that your calling is over, you over.
You over. And now you're standing before the creator saying, did you do what I was called to do? And I can't go there and say, oh, what happened was.
Absolutely. So people better get it right, bro. Listen, man. As our good friend Darren Ferguson always says, I love you to death and there's absolutely nothing you can do about it. I am honored to be able to call you my friend. And so this brotherhood that we have is something special. And I continue to love to build on it. And I believe that all of our callings are connected and we're going to be around a lot. You know what we're going to be like? It's going to be me, you. This is my vision. It's going to be me, you, Patrick, Eugene, David, Sean, Ferguson, probably about three or four other guys. And we're going to be reenacting that scene of life when Eddie Murphy and Martin Lawrence was at the baseball game.
At the baseball game, man. That one of my favorite movies, man. We just sit there. Hey, you remember when? what day is it?
Absolutely.
What is that? Oh, yeah.
That's where we're going to be. I think that's God's vision for us all, to leave us sane enough to be able to have comical moments. With each other, to relish in this, to be able to look back and see that we are worthy, no pun intended, of what God has asked us to do in our calling. And so, thank you, brother. I appreciate you.
Thank you.
You'll be back because there's some other conversations we got to have as well. But to all of my I Am Dad podcast listeners, thank you so much for tuning in. You know how I like to leave you. Always be kind to others as you're kind to yourself, or you might find yourself by yourself. Always shoot high for your goals, because even if you miss, you'll be amongst the stars. And that's my good friend and mentor, Arthur Mitchell, always said to me, it's nice to be important, but you know what? It's much more important to be nice. Till next Sunday, peace out.
Thank you so much for taking the time to spend with us. You've been listening to I Am Dad Podcast. We hope that you have been informed, encouraged you to think, or even inspired your heart for the love of dads. The conversation does not end here. Come back and join us next week. Same time, same place. Or you can continue the dialogue on our I Am Dad Facebook page. We also invite you to listen to past episodes, learn more about us, and keep up with special activities by visiting IamDadPodcast.com. That's IamDadPodcast.com. Until next time, I leave you with this reminder of manhood from 1 Corinthians chapter 13, verse 11. When I was a child, I spoke as a child. I understood as a child. I thought as a child. But when I became a man, I put away childish things. Because of this reminder, I will always understand that I am dad, period.